This is Remembrance Day. As we approach the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month, we pause to pay tribute to those Australians who gave their lives in war. This year, RPH Australia wishes to join you all in observing 1 minute of silence, after which we will be bringing you a special programme of war poetry in honour of the fallen in so many wars.
Go back to 2003 and an article that appeared in the Sydney Morning Herald about Remembrance Day in London that year that had special significance for Australia. It was written by Steve Meacham and it was headed A War Poem That Echoes Down the Years. Words written by a young Australian who came ashore at Gallipoli will be heard again in London, writes Stephen. On the 11th day of the 11th month, when the Queen dedicates the new $9 million Australian War Memorial at London's Hyde Park, one poem will ring through the evocative gloom of the northern winter.
The guns were silent, and the silent hills had bowed their grasses to a gentle breeze. I gazed upon the vales and on the rills and whispered, "What of these? And what of these? These long-forgotten dead with sunken graves, some crossless with unwritten memories. Their only mourners are the moaning waves, their only minstrels are the singing trees." And thus I mused and sorrowed wistfully.
So ends the first verse of The Last to Leave, written by 23-year-old Australian soldier-poet Leon Gellert, a combatant at Gallipoli, to mark the evacuation of the peninsula in 1915. Now, 9 decades after Gellert penned those lines, his poem has been chosen to be an emotional centrepiece of the dedication ceremony. Though details have yet to be announced, The Herald understands the 45-minute ceremony will begin with the Queen inspecting Australian forces in front of 750 invited guests, including Prime Minister John Howard and his British counterpart, Tony Blair. At 11 a.m, the crowd will observe the traditional Armistice Day 2-minute silence. Then, after a spectacular flypast and speeches by Howard, Blair and the Queen, Gellert's poem will be recited by a so far unnamed Australian veteran. That Gellert, a former Herald journalist, should feature is hardly surprising, since he is generally regarded as Australia's finest war poet, the Rupert Brooke of the Australian Imperial Force, according to his biographer and a former Herald colleague, Gavin Souter. The particular poem is more contentious, for it is not the best known of his World War I poems, published in 1917 as Songs from a Campaign. Apparently, staff at the Australian High Commission in London recommended The Last to Leave after reading it in From Gallipoli to Gaza, a recently published work on World War I poets by Australian author Jill Hamilton. Speaking from London, Hamilton said that though dignitaries would be making speeches, these are the only actual words by a soldier who was there in the battle. So, who was Gellert? And how did he come to produce such a wonderful collection of evocative battlefield verse? Leon Maxwell Gellert, born in Adelaide in May 1892, was the grandson of a schoolmaster who had emigrated from Hungary. According to Souter's A Torrent of Words, young Leon was regularly beaten by his father James, who also, on one occasion, beheaded the family cat to test the sharpness of a tomahawk. At 17, Leon took self-defence lessons, which proved their worth when his father attacked him with a piece of 4x4 timber. Gellert Sr. ended up on his back. After school, Leon worked as a pupil teacher specialising in physical education. Like many teenagers, he also wrote poetry, though no examples of his early work survive. He enlisted in the AIF on August 22, 1914, only 18 days after Britain had declared war on Germany. His service record, says Souter, described him as 22, Methodist, single, 5 feet 9 inches, 175 centimetres, complexion fair, eyes grey, hair light brown. On October 22nd, Gellert and the 10th Battalion set off for Egypt. Halfway across the Indian Ocean, Souter reports, Corporal Gellert became drunk for the first time in his life on Melbourne Bitter. Gellert resumed writing poetry after arriving in Cairo. His output grew once the 10th set off for the Dardanelles. For 7 weeks, his battalion was kept in reserve on its troop ship before being ordered to land at Are Burno Beach at dawn on April 25. Gellert survived 9 weeks on Gallipoli before coming down with dysentery. Evacuated to Malta, he contracted typhoid and was sent to England to convalesce. This is where most of his poems were written, including, Souter presumes, The Last to Leave. After collapsing into a coma that doctors suspected was epileptic, Gellert was discharged as medically unfit on June 30, 1916. Amazingly, he re-enlisted in November, only to be discharged 4 days later when his medical record was uncovered. His reputation was cemented when his collection of 55 poems, including Before Action, The Return, War, The Death, and The Attack at Dawn was published. Songs of a Campaign established Gellert and Souter's words as the most outstanding Australian war poet until Kenneth Slessor in World War II. Yet Souter agrees Gellert never subsequently matched the quality of his wartime verse. After editing the prestigious Art in Australia magazine, Gellert moved to Sydney and joined the Sydney Morning Herald in 1942. initially as magazine editor, then as literary editor. His weekly column, Something Personal, became one of the high points of the Saturday issue. It continued, renamed Speaking Personally, when he joined the Sunday Sun, later the Sun Herald, in 1961, and ended his journalism career on the rival Sunday Telegraph in 1968. After the death of his wife Kathleen in 1969, he moved back to Adelaide, where he died in August 22, 1977. In his final days, he might have mused on the closing lines of the Last to Leave.
The dead would be remembered evermore, the valiant dead that gazed upon the skies and slept in great battalions by the shore.
The Australian War Memorial that was dedicated by Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth and the then Australian Prime Minister on November 11, 2003, commemorates the Australian servicemen and women who fought in the defence of freedom alongside Britons in two battles of a world at war in 1914 to 1918 and 1939 to 1945. That are reflected in 47 battle names highlighted in the wall. The memorial also reflects the impact of war beyond the battlefield by listing the 23,000 hometowns of those who served in the Royal Australian Navy, the Australian Army, the Royal Australian Air Force and Merchant Navy in the two world wars. Of those 1.5 million Australians who served, over 101,000 did not return home. The architect of the memorial, Peter Tonkin, of Tonkin Zuleika Greer Architects, with artist Janet Lawrence, said the form chosen for the memorial on the corner of Hyde Park reflects the sweep of Australian landscape, the breadth and generosity of our people. The openness we believe should characterise our culture was inspired by the contours of the Hyde Park corner site. The memorial was constructed using green-grey Australian granite from Jerramungup, Western Australia. Granite was also used for paving around the memorial. In accordance with design requirements, water falls across the face of the memorial in a programmed sequence and is recycled via a series of concealed ducts and weirs. LED lighting bars illuminate the panels by night. All visible components of the memorial were sourced from Australia, dispatched to the site and incorporated during the construction phase. All Australian granite was shaped and finished in Australia and fixed on site by Australian tradesmen to provide a truly Australian flavour to honour our fallen. Much of the horror and trauma of war was vividly captured by war artists and poets. One of the most memorable poems of World War I was In Flanders Fields by Lieutenant Colonel John McCrae. It is a lasting legacy of the terrible battle in the Ypres Salient in the spring of 1915, and it is the reason poppies were chosen as the Remembrance Day flower.
In Flanders fields the poppies blow between the crosses, row on row, that mark our place, and in the sky the lark still bravely singing fly, scarce heard amid the guns below. We are the dead. Short days ago we lived, felt dawn, saw sunset glow, loved and were loved, and now we lie in Flanders fields. Take up our quarrel with the foe. To you from failing hands we throw the torch, be yours to hold it high. If ye break faith with us who die, we shall not sleep, though poppies grow in Flanders fields.
John McCrae was a Canadian doctor attached to the 1st Field Artillery Brigade during World War I. The casualties and the sufferings he witnessed around him affected him profoundly. One death, however, hit him harder than the rest, a young friend and former student, Lieutenant Alexis Helmer, was killed by a shell burst on the 2nd of May 1915. He was buried that same day by the field hospital, and McCrae performed the ceremony, as there was no chaplain. The next day, while on a short break from surgery, he wrote the now famous poem In Flanders Fields. He put all his grief at his young friend's death into the poem. However, it might never have been published because McCrae was not happy with it and threw it away. Luckily, a fellow officer rescued it and sent it to England, where it was published in Punch on the 8th of December 1915. McCrae was wounded in May 1918 and died 3 days later. Once again, it was an English poet this time, Siegfried Sassoon, who recorded his thoughts on the aftermath of World War I.
Have you forgotten yet? For the world's events have rumbled on since those gagged days, like traffic checked while at the crossing of city ways. And the haunted gap in your mind has filled with thoughts that flow like clouds in the lit heaven of life, and you're a man reprieved to go, taking your peaceful share of time with joy to spare. But the past is just the same, and war's a bloody game. Have you forgotten yet? Look down and swear by the slain of the war that you'll never forget. Do you remember the dark months you held the sector at Mametz? The nights you watched and wired and dug and piled sandbags on parapets? Do you remember the rats and the stench of corpses rotting in front of the frontline trench? And dawn coming, dirty white, and chill with a hopeless rain. Do you ever stop and ask, is it all going to happen again? Do you remember the hour of din before the attack, and the anger, the blind compassion that seized and shook you as you peered at the doomed and haggard faces of your men? Do you remember the stretcher cases lurching back, with dying eyes and lolling heads, those ashen grey masks of the lads who once were keen and kind and gay? Have you forgotten yet? Look up and swear by the green of the spring that you'll never forget.
And in RSL clubs around the country, the ode that we stand for each day comes from a poem by another English poet, R.L. Bunyan, for the fallen.
They shall grow not old, as we that are left grow old. Age shall not weary them, nor the years condemn. At the going down of the sun, and in the morning, we will remember them.
And yet again, a prescient thought in a speech given by Winston Churchill on December 16, 1918, and quoted from Les Carlyon's book, The Great War.
We must look forward 100, 200, 300 years to the time when the vast continent of Australia will contain an enormous population, and when that great population will look back through the preceding periods of time to the world-shaking episode of the Great War, and when they will seek out with the most intense care every detail of that struggle, when the movements of every battalion, of every company, will be elaborately unfolded to the gaze of all, when every family will seek to trace some connection with the heroes who landed on the Gallipoli Peninsula, or fought on the Somme, or in other great battles in France.
We will remember them.
Now an extract from the book The Great War by Les Carlyon. Near Villa Bretonneau, on June 7, 1918, Private Henry Gibb died when a shell burst at his feet. An eyewitness told the Red Cross, "He was so badly damaged that I would not tell his people. The parts of his body were gathered up and buried. A mate of mine took H.J. Gibb's son, who is in the artillery, to see the grave." Gibb's headstone at Villa Bretonneau carries the words, "Peace after strife," and lists him as being 45 years old. His wife Agnes, in supplying details for the roll of honour at the Australian War Memorial, said his age was 63. Henry Gibb is probably the oldest Australian to have died during the Great War.
If I should die, think only this of me, that there's some corner of a foreign field that is forever England. There shall be in that rich earth a richer dust concealed, a dust whom England bore, shaped, made aware, gave once her flowers to love, her ways to roam, a body of England's, breathing English air. Washed by the rivers, blessed by suns of home. And think, this heart, all evil shed away, a pulse in the eternal mind, no less gives somewhere back the thoughts by England given. Her sights and sounds, dreams happy as her day, and laughter learnt of friends, and gentleness in hearts at peace, under an English heaven.
In the gloaming. Here dead lie we because we did not choose to live and shame the land from which we sprung. Life, to be sure, is nothing much to lose, but young men think it is, and we were young. A.E. Housman.
There were so many of them, more than 300,000, and we never really saw them. Not when it mattered to see them, anyway. Not when they were doing the things that marked them as different then and now from the rest of us. Here they are, resting during a lull in one of the Somme battles, their boots sprinkled with white dust. Some drag on cigarettes, lumpy and hand-rolled. One daydreams, another eyes big, face like a slab of marble just stares. Not at the landscape, nor at the shell holes that sit lip to lip like sores, but at some panorama that exists only in his mind and now holds him prisoner. One rereads a cutting that his mother has sent him from the Ballarat Courier. Another scribbles with an indelible pencil worn so short that it needs to be gripped with a thumb and forefinger in a taut circle. He adds three or four lines to what he wrote the night before.
A poem now from the era of the Battle of Britain. The Our Wall Battle of Britain poem was written by Flight Lieutenant William Walker. It was read at the unveiling of the memorial wall that forms part of the National Battle of Britain Memorial. Here inscribed the names of friends we knew, young men with whom we often flew, scrambled to many angels high, they knew that they or friends might die. Many were very scarcely trained, and many badly burnt or maimed. Behind each name a story lies of bravery in summer skies, though many brave unwritten tales were simply told in vapour trails. Many now lie in sacred graves, and many rest beneath the waves, outnumbered every day they flew, remembered here just as the few. The memorial wall was added to the Battle of Britain Memorial in 2005, with almost 3,000 names being engraved on black granite tablets. The National Memorial to the Few at Capel Le Fern on the famous White Cliffs between Dover and Kent occupies a special place in the hearts and minds of all those who have visited this moving site. Never in the field of human conflict was so much owed by so many to so few. Winston Churchill. Now a poem by Judith Knight, prefaced thus. This is written in honour of my good friend Sergeant Charles Bielke, one of the 385 brave men, heroes all, who survived the Battle of the Chosin Reservoir battle ready. It is dedicated to Colonel Donald C. Faith, Jr., of the 1st Battalion, 32nd Infantry Regiment, who died 2 miles from the freedom he led the Chosin Few to. Colonel Faith is the lifetime personal hero of Sergeant Bielke, who is a veteran of the 3rd Battalion, 31st Infantry Regiment, 7th Infantry Division. I am so proud to call him friend, says Judith Knight. The poem's entitled When Hell Freezes Over. When hell freezes over, we've all heard this casual remark, so absurd and thought little of, and just as well for those who ever heard of a frozen hell. Well, listen to me and you will know of the frozen hell where soldiers go. I can tell you now how it was then when I went to hell and back again. It was back in 50, you know the score, when the 31st went off to war. We were the polar bears. We'd been around, but we almost lost it on that frozen ground. It was called Chosin, that frozen place, inhabitable, I'd say, by God's own race. But there we were at 40 below, with frozen ear and frozen toe, with weapon frozen to the hand, then forced to fight for this bitter land, outnumbered there by the devil's brood, fighting to death and dying crude. We did not bleed, for our blood was frozen there on the battleground, we recall as Chosin. And on we went, our numbers small, to Haguari Ri, as I recall. Even in hell a hero's born, and we had ours that frozen morn, when Donald Faith redeemed us there, but stayed behind in the devil's lair. Like one before, a sacrifice made, he gave his life for those he saved. 4,000 strong were never more. 3,000 lay on the devil's floor. And of those left to fight again, there were but a handful. Of Faith's own men he led us out that day from hell, its sacred ground, where our hero fell. A ragtag lot, half frozen men, half able but willing to fight again. And I am one, and you may be one too. We are known today as the Chosin Few.
Silent Homecoming, 1965. My shining shoes echoed hollow sounds as I walked home toward that sacred ground, where childhoods were spent in laughter and sun. That time was long before I learned to shoot a gun. For me, no bands or crowds came to meet as I left the bus and found the street. I did notice that faces turned, looked away from this uniform all pressed with medals displayed. A small town where no one said hello. A small town where there was no one I didn't know. Now, in retrospect, this greeting seems like cheers. compared to comrades returning to their homes the next 10 years.